introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Very, very, very excited to be kicking off this year's one-a-day draft series with the man, the myth, the legend, the hardest working man on draft Twitter, QB1, JR. My man, how's it going? How you been?
Day closer to the draft, so everything's good, man. I'm excited.
Yes, sir. Well, as we get closer to the draft, like we did last year, it's time to really put you to work. I know you've been putting in work. You've been working on the draft guide, making multiple appearances a day on podcasts. But, you know, we got to bring you home and get some of that good information from you here as we start working up to the draft. So I hope you're ready.
I'm super ready.
All right. Well, let's do it. Today, we are going to start off the series with a position that is near and dear to most Vikings fans. And even though this draft series isn't Vikings specific, I think many of the people who follow us are Vikings fans. And so starting off with the interior offensive line, I think should be something that that brings joy to many. So the way this is all going to work, JR is not going to give you a top five list or a top 10 list or anything like that. As we work through everything here, JR is going to give us his favorite player, regardless of scheme, on the first, second, third day of the draft, give us a little bit about why he likes those players. But before we get to all that, JR is going to let us peek behind the curtain a little bit, give us a little bit of a background on how he scouts the position. So with that, JR, interior offensive line. Offensive line's a position that most of us really don't know much about. So when you go, you turn on the film, and you need to start scouting interior offensive linemen, what are you looking at?
Yeah, so that's a really tough question because there's just so much you have to know as far as like understanding offensive linemen. And I think the first thing you have to understand is the scheme that they're being placed in. And two basic types of scheme are zone scheme, is where you're blocking an area or a space. You're not necessarily blocking a certain guy in front of you. So each gap is lettered A through E, or A through D, I should say. So each lineman up front is assigned a certain gap on every single type of zone scheme. So they're not necessarily blocking a man or a certain person that's standing in front of them. They're necessarily blocking a gap, a zone, whether that's to their right or to their left. And something to remember in zone schemes is that everybody should be moving the same direction. So if you see that person on film going the opposite direction of everybody else, then they're probably wrong. Now, on the flip side of that, the other scheme that you have is called a gap or a man blocking type of zone scheme or a man blocking type of scheme. Where you're blocking an actual person in front of you. So with that, you're trying to get a body on a body and you're actually covering up certain people opposite of you. And that's really the difference between the two. So that's really the first thing that you have to learn about these offensive linemen. What type of scheme are they placed in, whether that's a zone or a man blocking scheme? And then forward from that, that's where you decipher the certain characteristics that they have as far as how well do they bend, how well they move in space, and then understanding their certain limitations. Were they hid by the scheme or did they flourish in that scheme? And that's something that you see throughout this entire class.
And so when you're looking at those, you know, those two schemes, and you know, primarily when we talk about those, I feel like we're most often talking about run blocking. Is either of those schemes harder to translate when you're looking at, you know, kind of the next level? I guess merely system agnostic. Like if you're just looking at this player and saying, this guy is good, would you rather someone who had to deal with, you know, someone in a man scheme or someone in a zone scheme if you're looking to make that projection for them without knowing where they're going to end up at the next level?
I think it's just the type of player that you're looking for, the type of flavor that you want. With man blocking scheme, you can really hide the little or the worst type of athletes, because they don't have to necessarily move as far as hard in a man blocking scheme because they're just covering up people in front of them. They can use that wide body that they do have. Now in a zone scheme, you want your more athletic type of offensive lineman so they can cover up those A through D gaps in those certain areas. And they have to be able to move, especially laterally, because that's the specifics or the direction that zone schemes type really run into. So with those zone scheme types, you want guys that can really move or have really good foot quickness. So Brian O'Neill is a great example of that. Last year, he thrives in a zone scheme because it's not necessarily asking you to show or overpower guys or show off your strength. rather than to show off your lateral agility. So you want better types of athletes in that zone scheme.
All right. Well, let us get to it here. Interior offensive linemen, so the guards, the centers, day one of the draft. Who is your absolute favorite and why?
So I have a couple guys that I really like. Garrett Bradbury, that's really my top interior offensive lineman right now. A center, a guy I got to see down at the Senior Bowl, and one that I'm really familiar with, being that he went to NC State and me being in the area. Fantastic background story, former tight end. He came to NC State as a three-star prospect, I believe it was. He weighed about 225 pounds, so he came as a tight end, and he worked his way up. He had some position switches. He actually went over to defensive line in 2015, I believe it was. Things didn't work out for him there, so he transitioned back to the offensive side of the ball, and he started playing guard in 2016, and then he officially transitioned to center in 2017, and then he's been lights out ever since then. And something you have to understand about Bradbury is that, once again, like Brian O'Neill, he's not going to overpower guys, but he just really likes to cover guys up or really get in the way. And he thrives on what's called reach blocks, and where he's able to pin the outside shoulders of guys. So that certain direction that you're running laterally, he's able to cover up those guys' outside shoulders and create those running lanes up the middle. And that's the area where he really does thrive. So he's my top guy. He's my top center on the board. Another guy that I really like, his name is Eric McCoy from Texas A&M. He was lights out. I think his best game was against Clemson by far, and we know how good their interior defensive line was last year with Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence on the interior. He just manhandled them all game long. Now, he's not a big guy. He's only about 6'3", 300 pounds, so he's on a bit of the smaller side, but he's feisty. He stands in there, and he fights, and he has good foot quickness, and I think he's very scheme diverse. So he doesn't necessarily have to be in just a zone or a man blocking scheme. I think he's kind of a best of both worlds, but I think he would be better in a zone scheme because of his lack of size. And then another guy who's very popular on Vikings Twitter right now is Chris Lidstrom from Boston College. He has played a little bit of right tackle, but the past few years he has played right guard at Boston College. And I thought they kind of hid his strengths a bit because they really like to run the football a lot. So you didn't really get to see him pass protect as much. But we really saw that down at the Senior Bowl, and him and Dalton Risner playing beside each other. I thought they were lights out the entire week. So if they target him maybe at 50 with their second round pick, I think that would be a really good selection.
And of course, I should have known that once we get you going, you know, I say one a day, and then, you know, JR, he's got to give you a little bit extra. He gives you three right out the bat. So are all of those guys you're seeing as day one types of players, or based on your rankings? Because I know as I've started to do a little bit more work into draft Twitter, it seems, especially with the offensive line, guys are ranked kind of all over the place. It doesn't seem to be as firm a consensus on where guys are going to be ranking this year when you start to look across the different rankings across draft Twitter or the major publications.
Yeah, and that's because there's no headliner name like last year with Quentin Nelson. So with Bradbury, with Lidstrom, with McCoy, they're going to be all over the place because evaluators just really have different types that they like. And Bradbury's not a guy that's going to overpower or have just flashy types of clips on tape. So he's not going to catch guys' eyes a lot. So that's why opinions are kind of mixed about him. But I actually have a first round grade on him. I think very highly of him. He's my 19th overall prospect right now. And I don't expect him to go 19 overall, but I think he definitely could go in that ladder of the first round type of range, especially early on day two. I think I would be very surprised if he makes it past pick 35 or 36.
Okay, so we got here we go with JR is letting us know where he's at with it, a little bit different than consensus, but guys that he sees that could potentially go on day one. So take me into to day two. Who is or are your favorites as we get into to day two of the draft across the interior offensive line?
There's actually quite a few, and I think this interior offensive line class is a bit deeper than what it's given credit for. And then you're getting into guys like Elton Jenkins from Mississippi State. And something that's noticeable about him is that he's not going to have flashy film where he's just pile driving guys into the dirt. But you talk about a guy that just covers up guys, and he just does his assignment. He's not flashy. He just gets the job done, and he goes home. That's the best way to describe him. Like I said, he's not going to plant guys in the turf. He's not going to be nasty or anything like that. But you look up, he's not giving up any pressures throughout the game, and he just does his job. Now, on the flip side of that, a guy that's extremely nasty, and he played for the Oklahoma Sooners, and that's Drew Samia, the guard from Oklahoma. And I think he's a bit smaller. He's only about 6'5", 305 pounds, but his body is built very linear. and you see them get overpowered at times because they did like to run a lot of power type of schemes or man blocking schemes at Oklahoma. And that's where you really saw his flaws really being exposed. But when they ran those zone types of schemes to where he could just out athlete a lot of the guys or the opposition, that's really where you've seen him flourish. A couple other guys I'll give you is Connor McGovern from Penn State and Michael Dieter from Wisconsin. I think both of those guys could be late day two, early day three type of talents that could go in the third or fourth round.
Last but certainly not least, who are the sleepers? Who are the ones that, you know, your team's looking to add a little bit of depth there? And, you know, some of these guys maybe fall down the board. Who are the ones that you like on the last day of the draft that could come in and help a team?
Yeah, so there's really, well, this guy's not really a sleeper anymore. He was about a month ago. But Nate Davis from UNC Charlotte, who the Vikings actually had in on a top 30 visit, I think he definitely is a sleeper. He's only played guard, and he's had some issues with staying healthy. So I think he probably will go in the fourth round. I think that's the sweet spot for him. Well, you talk about that barely small refrigerator type of round build for a guard. He looks exactly like a guard. Now, he's never had or played center before, and maybe that may be his best position. Because only about 6'3", about 315 pounds. So maybe he does have to transition more along the interior, and he's not the best athlete in the world either. So I think he's more of your man-blocking type of guard. And then another one I like is Phil Haynes from Wake Forest, a guy that played in not the East-West Shrine game, but the NFLPA, a bowl out in L.A., and I thought he really shined there. And I was reading some good stuff about him, former basketball player. So he has those quick feet that you're looking for. And another name that the Vikings have shown some interest in is Michael Jordan from Ohio State. Now, I think he's extremely raw. He's going to have to gain some strength. And he took over for Billy Price last year at Ohio State. He transitioned to center, but I don't think he is a center. I think he's more of a guard. So very linear. Like I said, he's 6'6", 315 pounds. So he would be one of the tallest centers in the league if a team does keep him there. But I think he's a guard, and I think he's probably a guy that maybe 1 to 2 years away from being a starter, but initially he's a really nice developmental piece.
All right. Well, there it is. We did it. A lot of information given to you very, very quickly. And we made it, JR. A little bit less work for you than we did last year, but a lot of information, yeah, as you always do for us here. So that's it. That's all. Offensive line, interior offensive lineman, knocked out for you here in about 10 minutes with the man, QB1. And there it is. First day in the books. Hope you stick with us. We'll be doing one of these basically every day every weekday from now until the draft. So, see you again tomorrow. Have a good one.